Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Hi. My name is Ann McNeil, and I am the master wealth builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And I'm excited to be here again this Wednesday with my co-host, Iona McNeil. And we want to welcome you to our podcast entitled Hashtag My Investing Story. Today is another phenomenal day to talk about better investing. And better investing, as some of you may remember, is a 501c3, not-for-profit organization, established to help individual investors learn how to invest. Now, consider this, the fact that it was founded in 1951 as the National Association of Investment Clubs. But better investing over the years continues to help individuals with unbiased stock investing classes, effective online stock selection and analysis tools. We're going to hear about that tonight. And also exclusive investor publications and other resources. But end of the day, we are not stockbrokers. We don't sell any penny stock. We are not focusing on any of that. We're just here as volunteers, Ione and I, to share with you another investing story. And that investing story tonight is going to be shared by a phenomenal guest. And actually, I didn't get to tell you this, but Ione, our special guest tonight, as I've listened to her share on our stock BI model club, it's almost like a treat. So our guest tonight is none other than Miss Sophia. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this properly, Sophia, but Batella?
Yep, that's it.
Perfect. Okay. Sophia has a master's degree in finance, and she has a passion for financial and data analysis. She has spent the bulk of her career analyzing and applying her skill sets to cloud system implementation, ranging from small mom and pop businesses to multinational corporations. She enjoys learning more about the stock selection guide and helping other retail investors refine their equity analysis and practices. And so it's a pleasure for me, Sophia, to continue to welcome you to the show tonight. And also, Ione McNeil, how are you tonight as our host and co-host tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Listen, Ione, if I were any better, I would be you. So I am awesome.
Thank you. Well, exactly what you said, it is actually very exciting. I'm excited to have Sophia Batella come. It was one of those no-brainers. It was a little too close to home, but then when I thought about it, I was like, wait a minute. We need Sophia. We need her perspective. We need her story, because she has a unique story, which I don't know. And again, you know, if you are a regular listener, you know I try not to talk too much to the guests beforehand, because I want your first time listening to also be my first time listening as we uncover Sophia's story. So I will weave in a little bit of what I know about Sophia into our short time together. But like I usually ask most guests, Sophia, where are you from and what were your first memories of money?
Okay. So I'm actually originally from Dallas, Texas. So I'm a Texas native. And in terms of what are some of my first lessons of money, I mean, to be completely, transparent and everything else about that, really my growing up, it really was a master class in everything in how to not manage your money. So it was definitely growing up, it was really close up look as to, you know, here's how things can be mismanaged and here's the consequences of that and here's the things to not do, which is fine. Sometimes the best way to learn is to learn from other people's mistakes and what not to do. And that's just how I kind of accept and see that experience today.
Talk to us a little bit about some of those experiences. We would love to hear from a child's perspective, you know, what were you noticing? What did you pick up? And when you made those decisions, oh, I'm not going to do that, or I'm going to do things differently.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people can really understand the phrase of having more months than money. And so when you've got, you know, I was raised by a single mom. And so she was, you know, the sole breadwinner of the family and so on and so forth. So there just wasn't a lot of money to go around, and certainly not much money in terms of being able to save or plan for retirement and things like that. It was just from fire drill to fire drill. And growing up, you know, one of my first key lessons that I learned about money is, if nothing else, just save. And if there's nothing else you can do, make sure to pay myself first. Because everybody else is in line and they have their face in line, but you're not doing any favors by not paying yourself first. That's just kind of how I grew up. That was the ethos that I developed.
Wow. You're not doing yourself any favors. Could you repeat that line for us?
Sure. You're not doing yourself any favors by not paying yourself first.
And I love how, even though you didn't know anything about investing, you started with one thing, and that was saving. Can you take us back to when you made that decision? Were you a child chipping in with chores? Were you already maybe a teenager or a young adult working? How did you come to that kind of realization and application?
Sure. Again, to be perfectly, you know, transparent about it, it must have been like 8 or 9 years old, and it was like probably the 5th or 6th month in a row that we were getting our electricity cut off due to non-payment. And that's when it clicked in for me. I'm not doing this ever again.
Wow. I think, and I love, you know, that you are giving us some concrete examples, because I think the cape that a lot of parents wear is, I'm going to figure it out. I don't want to show my children that I'm struggling. I'm not going to talk about it.
Oh, they know. You're not keeping any secrets. They know. They can see. They know.
Yeah. And so it's interesting what children pick up. And it's interesting what they let you know, what they know and what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us about how you continue to grow up. I mean, you made that decision at 8 years old. Did you start to make money on your own? You know, what were kind of the next phase for you after being like, no, I'm not doing this?
Right. So I really saw education as being my primary vehicle out of, say, being broke or working class. And so what I was able to do, I was very fortunate to be able to secure a full scholarship to go to Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. And then from there, I came to FIU, Florida International University, here in Miami, Florida. And I actually technically have two masters. So my first is in human resource development, and then my second is a master's in finance. I typically reference the master's in finance because that's the more recent one. And that's probably the one that I probably use more from a day-to-day career perspective.
So when you graduated high school and you were headed off to college, you knew you needed to do something different. You knew you wanted to save. How did you choose your major? You know, what was your thought process around education being your way out? But what was it that you wanted to do when you were going into undergrad and then going on and getting that first master's?
Sure. So I actually have a bachelor's degree in psychology, which is a liberal arts degree. Not a whole lot you can do with that without some higher education, either at the master's at the very least or up to, say, a PhD doctorate level. And so that was the direction that I was trying to move towards initially, But then the professors were basically saying that it just was not the same viable career path that it once was, that dealing with insurance companies was a pain in the neck. You probably wouldn't even be able to do the type of psychology or a type of philosophy that you may really want to do, because what would be most reimbursable would be cognitive behavioral therapy. And if you didn't do it, it was basically that or bust. And so they were just encouraging us, hey, if you can do a business application of your degree, why don't you go ahead and do that? And so the one that I saw that most closely really kind of aligned to a lot of things that I learned from my undergraduate was human resource development, which is really learning basically how to develop and implement effective training and development programs within the workplace. And so it was actually in the middle of that degree that I took a public finance course as I was minoring in public administration. And I just fell in love with the topic so much, and I loved finance. And I was like, okay, I think now I know what it is that I really want to do, what I really want to study, and that's okay. And so then I just followed that up with the master's in finance.
So how long between the two degrees?
I just went from one to the other. Straight from one. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I just figured I'd like to knock it all out at once and just spend the rest of my life working, because that's what I could do the rest of my life, and just get it out of the way.
I like your determination. You spent no time wasted. So did you go straight through school or did you work at any point during this process?
So I did go straight through school. Whatever work I did was more of kind of a part-time basis. So like a graduate assistant within the education college for my first degree. During my master's in finance, I had worked part-time at a multifamily office, about 20 hours a week, helping them out with some of the things. And that's where I got exposed to how it is that, you know, they were a fund of funds. So I got exposed to how it is that, you know, we selected hedge funds and private equity funds and stuff like that. So I got really into a really good close-up view into more of that high finance world. I did an internship at a hedge fund up in New York. So little things here and there. But it wasn't until after I graduated with a finance degree that I moved into an actual full-time, real grown-up type of job with the salary and all that.
I'm so glad you took us on that career journey, because I want to ask, was taking that public finance class your first time learning about or even hearing about investing?
I would say that it was probably the most in-depth that I had seen up to that point. There was an AP economics class that I took way back in high school. And that was kind of more of your practical type of things that we were able to pick up, like never buy a car brand new because it depreciates too fast and you're just wasting your money buying a brand new car, things like that. But in terms of, you know, getting introduced to the idea of, you know, stocks and bonds and, you know, here's how things work in the public finance side, how the taxes work, how the different municipalities have to learn how to collect and spend those taxes and things like that, and some of the investments they have to make, because, you know, with a lot of these public organizations, such as the pension funds and things like that, they will go ahead and have, they're actually called within the industry whale accounts, because they're so big, it's the equivalent of landing a whale. And they have to go out and, like, go out and invest with some of these hedge funds, private equity funds, investment firms, things like that, to make sure that they're able to meet the retirement liabilities that they've got on their books.
Yeah, that's an important point, and I love this part of your experience, because I went to school undergrad for accounting,
mm-hmm.
and when you go to school, your formal education, the education is for you to land a job.
Mm-hmm.
That education is not for you to interpret applying those principles for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you speak a little bit to how you took this public finance course and even did a master's in finance, which allowed you to work in finance, but maybe not explain to you the basics of investing on a personal level?
Oh, yeah. So it's really great that I can sit there and talk about the duration of a bond, and I can do all this equity analysis techniques and econometrics and all that stuff. And, like, that's all really good and well, but I still don't know the difference between a regular 401k and a Roth IRA. Like, so those are some of the gaps in my personal knowledge that I was able to go ahead and start to fill with organizations like Better Investing. Because, yes, So you're kind of, you know, flying up here and doing all this fancy stuff, but then when it comes time to, well, how do I set up a 401k at my job? So what do I do with that? How does that work and operate? Nobody's really taking you through that personal finance perspective as to here's how you can go about these. This is a step-by-step, the things you want to do or look for and so on and so forth. You just don't get into those kind of nuts and bolts, the more practical things, you know, day-to-day stuff.
I'm so glad you told the truth about that, because, again, we haven't talked about it, so I made a really big assumption when I asked you that question. I was, you know, like treading water lightly, but I could take a gamble, you know, on the fact that you can graduate undergrad degree, accounting, finance, business. You can even take out the loans of a house and get a master's degree in finance and whatever else, and yet still not be able for your own personal life to show for it. Mm-hmm. So you have been working in the world of finance for a while, and actually you did take a pivot and move into the world of technology, but when did you start that, oh, wait a minute, I'm doing this, but how is this really impacting my own personal wealth outside of I know I can make a lot of money, income from this job? When did you start to really focus on your own personal finances?
Right. So I think it was probably around sometime middle of last year, I started to see, you know, I was saving rather aggressively for about the last decade. I've been able to squirrel away some money and everything. I started to think about, you know, what I want to do next. You know, I want to buy a home. I want to do this. I want to do that and so on and so forth. And then I just started thinking, well, I think I need to just kind of bone up on those skills again because, you know, after spending almost a decade of not really playing around with Excel and the financial models and all of that, you get a little bit rusty. And also there's also just a simple practical matter of I have a day job. And quite frankly, doing the type of analysis that I may want to do for a particular stock or something could be its own job in and of itself. What can I find out there that would be able to provide me with some resources to be able to kind of streamline some of this analysis, still be able to be rigorous, still kind of hold up to the personal standards that I would want to have for as to whether or not I would put money into a stock or something, but still kind of, you know, take some of that heavy lifting, some of that heavy burden off of me and give me some kind of a more of a, I would say, compact way of being able to accomplish the same goal. And so it was around the middle of last year that I was just thinking about that and trying to find, is there something similar out there that could might meet that objective? Because when I was in the master's program, I was actually part of the Student Managed Investment Fund at FIU. And I had a really great time with that. And it was just a lot of fun being able to learn how to research stocks, teach my other team members how to build out the models and things like that, and also develop stock pitches and listen to what other people had to say and come up with my own stock pitches and tell people about different stocks and why I thought it would be a buy and things like that. So I actually missed that environment quite a bit. And I said, well, what's the closest thing for a grown-up to be able to do this? And so that's when I was able to stumble upon better investing.
Wow. I'm so appreciative of your perspective right now because I didn't even realize the value of better investing and its tools from your perspective, from a person that has a career and has had a career in high finance. That's able to say, wait a minute, here's an organization that has some core values and has some tools and saves me a lot of time, but gets me to the same endpoint. Can you talk to us about how you stumbled upon better investing? What classes or activities or clubs have you visited? And then what convinced you to become a better investing member? Because you're not even a year old yet in terms of better investing membership. So I'm really interested to know from your perspective what's made a better investing membership so valuable, especially with your background and expertise.
Sure. So This is a little bit of a winding story, but back when I was on Miami Beach, there was actually a venture capital club that would meet once a week over in Miami Beach. It would basically be all these different startup companies, entrepreneurs would go up and present about their company, get some feedback about their pitch and things like that. And then if you wanted to invest in one of the companies, you could go in and try to do that. And one of the attendees, and this was way back in, like, I'm talking 2012, 2013 timeframe, so this is forever ago, really. And one of the attendees happened to be a member of some sort of chapter that was up here in Broward. I don't think it's your chapter. It may have been the one that preceded it or something. And he left me with the Better Investing newsletter. And I just kind of kept it away in a drawer for years and years and years and years. I was like, well, that's kind of an interesting concept. That's kind of cool. Okay, you know. And then I didn't really revisit it seriously until, like I said, about a year ago. And I said, wait, let me take a look at this magazine again. This is actually pretty good stuff. Actually, this is the kind of stuff that I actually would like to see more of and start to read more about and things like that. And then I just went online and decided to find out what is the South Florida chapter, what are they doing, what are they up to. And then I started to visit you guys. And then I just joined the actual Better Investing, but the more premium memberships lets you get the more advanced tools and things like that.
Excellent. Talk to us about you visiting the South Florida Chapter Model Club. How has that experience been? And you visited some other model clubs and investment clubs. Talk to us about what you've been observing and what you've been learning from those club experiences.
Sure. So I would say that each club kind of has their own style, the way that they run the meeting, the way that they run the stock pitch, things like that, and that's perfectly fine. I think the diversity is part of what makes it interesting. You know, one person may do it one way, another person does it another way. That's perfectly fine. But overall, I find the meetings to be well organized. There are clear agendas, and people do adhere to those agendas. It's not really an excuse for a social hour, social time, from what I've been able to see. And so that means, you know, and I've visited quite a few. So I think I've visited the D.C. chapter several times, the North Florida chapter, Rocky Mountain chapter, Central Pennsylvania. So I really wanted to get some, not only, I wanted to get a little bit of geographic diversity as well to kind of see, okay, what are some of the other regions? What are they focusing on? What are they looking at? Things like that. And I found it to be, on the whole, a really positive experience, really good, really solid. And I think that they're all doing really, really well for their membership in terms of getting them the tools that they need, getting them into the right mindset for how it is that, you know, you can effectively analyze the stock and then drive to that buy-sell decision.
Any experiences stand out for you? I know you mentioned a lot of different chapters, and I'm excited that you've gone to visit so many different model clubs, Better Investing model clubs across the country. Talk to us about some memorable experiences, whether they be layout, interactions, presentations, whatever just kind of have stuck so far through your travels.
Yeah. So since I have visited quite a few, it's hard to remember which one it is specifically that does this. But one thing that I do like from one of the clubs is that they'll have a poll within the go-to meeting or the presentation where they'll bring up the SSD, they'll talk about, okay, now we're ready to come up with revenue projections. Okay, so now we're going to release it out to the club. What do you want to use as the revenue growth rate? And then you'll get some different options along with the associated rationale for what drives that particular option. And then it's just really a majority vote. And so let's say, for example, if you've got 10, 11, 12, 13%, and the majority is, say, 11% for one reason, for whatever reason or another, then they use 11% as their revenue growth rate. So I think that's pretty interesting because that kind of keeps people engaged and keeps them plugged in into what's going on, and they get to kind of make a group decision about, okay, here's our group consensus about what the assumptions should be so that we can drive to the final decision.
Excellent. One of the things that I want to bring up and I would like you to, you know, comment on and add to is that when you came to visit the South Florida Model Investment Club, you, of course, were a guest, right? And even though you were new, you were always contributing. And we were a new club. We still are a new club. And you actually offered to do a presentation on the healthcare sector, on one of the stocks. You did Pfizer. And you did an analysis, a DCF, which is discounted cash flow analysis. Talk to us about when you realized that the way you knew how to analyze companies and the tool of the stock selection guide and how they merged to incorporate that kind of high finance perspective, but also beginner perspective. I never got a chance to talk to you about maybe that aha moment for you where you actually saw how your research fit right into this visual representation of the same data.
Sure. So I think it was actually at the meeting where I was presenting on the Pfizer stock and showing the club, okay, here's all the things that I did, the calculations and so on and so forth. And then we took a look at the SSG itself and we looked at what's called the preferred stock procedure. And it was there that we saw that basically the five-year estimate of the cash flows associated with Pfizer was actually very close to what I had done all the extra work for in the DCF. And we came up to basically the same free cash flow figures after 5 years, and it was only off by like maybe 100 or 200, something like that. So it wasn't a very big difference between the two. And that's when I saw, oh, okay, so this tool is actually really solid. It's robust. It's reliable. It's something that if I want to do this instead of going through the full, say, discounted cash flow analysis, this would not be a bad option for a proxy to go through that exercise.
Yeah, what I loved about that interaction was that, you know, we as an organization have not done SSGs by hand in 20 years, easily.
Okay.
And the reason I bring that up is because a lot of new people who are new to better investing, who don't have a finance background, and they're using the SSG, to me, it's like using a calculator without having learned your timetable.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, you can get to the answer.
Yes.
But do you know how to get to the answer without using this calculation or using this computer or using this machine?
Mm-hmm.
And when you did that discounted cash flow analysis, I was like, oh, my goodness. She's doing this by hand. This was the first time, to be honest, that I had seen, I know I've seen it before, but, you know, I have to give you a credit. But I've seen the preferred procedure done by hand because when you were presenting, you were taking us through this thing. And, of course, for a lot of our members who are new, they were chatting me like, yo, this is going over my head. I'm like, wait, just listen, watch. And, I was eating it up because even for us, you know, we are regular people in better investing, and we like to keep it simple. But it was very enlightening to have someone of your caliber and your experience to come in and do a DCF analysis almost like second nature, and for us to see how valuable from an outsider perspective our tool is, because we may not think that we're doing somersaults,
mm-hmm.
but the reality is the power of our tool and the potential of our community, they do somersaults. We just don't see them, mm-hmm. you know. And so your perspective really added to how valuable the SSG is and how many things it does for us without us seeing it. So I'm so glad that you were able to present to our club, especially doing that, because, again, a lot of times we don't know what we have until an outsider can kind of come in and go toe for toe with it, and we be able to see how it held its own weight. And and I don't know what that moment meant for you, but it was nice to see that. For me, looking at you, it seemed to be a kind of aha moment or an enlightening moment of, oh, okay, yeah, let me learn a little bit more about this stock selection guide because I think I can use it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would definitely agree with that.
So Michelle reminded us that you have some book recommendations, and you've been,
yes.
Again, you know, you're not a partner in our club, but you can be a visitor any and all the time in our club because you, even as a visitor, you're always dropping gems and sharing resources with us, one of which, and I think Miss Yvonne is on tonight, she had to give you a shout-out because in her presentation last Saturday, she used the resource that you shared with us months ago. But yeah, talk to us about some of those educational resources that you would love to share with us.
Sure. Do you mind if I share my screen? Would that be okay?
Oh, no, please.
All right. So let me know if you can see my screen.
Yes.
All right. So I saw that in the chat. This was actually sent out as an Excel spreadsheet. So I would encourage people to go ahead and download this if they would like to have it for their own personal use. But for this first tab here, the reading checklist, this is your suggested order of reading. So for somebody that's saying, well, I don't really know where to start. Where do I go? How do I go about this? This will actually break it down to you step by step. So the first thing that I do recommend is try to understand a little bit more about a sector that you may be interested in. And one really good way to do that is to read one of the Fisher Investments books. After that, I think probably one of the best things to do is then move on to Pitch the Perfect Investment, the Essential Guide to Winning on Wall Street. Now, the thing about this book is that it is tailored to an audience of people that want to go ahead and become, say, you know, hedge fund analysts, mutual fund analysts. They want to move into the finance industry and make money management and stock picking and things like that their career. However, what I like about the book is that it is accessible enough that if you're, say, a retail investor and just want to learn a few extra things and also understand, okay, I'm going to present this SSG, this stock, whatever it is that you're looking to do, the principles are really roughly the same. So I would say, yeah, I think this will be the perfect follow-up and complement after that. This other book, Investment Banking, about valuation, LBOs, and M&A. So if you're wanting to learn a little bit more about kind of the nuts and bolts and have access to things like test models and Excel files and things like that, that's actually not a bad one to take a look at. There is another book. It's actually a textbook for financial statement analysis where you can learn how to more effectively analyze financial statements, do ratios, things like that. And then if you really want to get brave, anything from the advanced valuation readings that I'll be sharing with you guys, you can select from any of that. And then there's some general readings from the finance industry that you can do pretty much at any time in your journey just to learn a little bit more about the industry, some of the underlying dynamics, some of the key players and things like that. Just kind of more fun FYI stuff.
Excuse me, Sophia, can you just enlarge the font?
It's yes.
Kind of small to see that. Thank you.
How's that? Is that better?
I think we can read it now. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So that's pretty much the suggested order of reading. So on this tab, I break it down to books for beginners. So the first set of books are sector overviews, and they all come from the same publisher, Fisher Investments. And I think that it's a really good way for people to get introduced to a sector, some of the key industries and sub-industries within it, some of the key metrics and numbers that you may want to look at when you're looking at things such as the 10K or the 10Q for the company within that sector, and really understand how do I want to build a strategy around this. So I think this is a really great place to start. Okay, so Richard, it is available in the chat, but I can also make sure that the organizers of this can go ahead. Can you guys email this out to people or make it available on the website or something?
We can plan to do that.
Okay, great. All right. Now, also for the beginners, there's a couple of books by Peter Lynch, and these are actually Beating the Street and One Up on Wall Street. These are actually classics within the retail community or retail investor community. And I've actually read these books myself. I think they're great no matter what level you're at, but they're a really good place to start to understand, okay, how is it that I want to try to find a potential stock to buy? What is it that I may want to look at? while I personally do not necessarily agree with some of the things that Peter Lynch may have done as a money manager, such as buying, you know, thousands of stocks at a time or like have a portfolio of 1,000 stocks, I don't think that's anything anybody could reasonably manage at the professional or, you know, retail investor level. But there's still some principles that he provides that I think anybody could learn from. And then finally, the last one for the beginners is A Random Walk Down Wall Street. This is another classic within the space, and I definitely recommend that for anybody that's looking to get started. Now, at the intermediate level, I start to shift a little bit and say, okay, if you want to learn about M&A, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to understand mid-market M&A, this is a really great book that I think you can take a look at. I previously recommended the investment banking book, which I like it because it is kind of a 3-for-1 deal where you get to learn about valuation, leverage buyouts, and M&A within a public company context. So the thing about this is that it isn't necessarily for you to learn, oh, here's how I do a DCF. This is how I do an LBO leverage buyout model or an M&A model. It's more about for you to understand what are some of the key drivers behind that so that if you're looking at a stock, planning to invest in the stock or already have a stake in a stock, and you find out, oh, they're about to be bought out by this private equity firm, or, oh, they're planning to do the merge with this company or acquire this other company, you can start to begin to understand what are some of the strategic rationales behind that. Does that make sense for your particular stock in question, things like that, to give you a little bit broader perspective in terms of the investment analysis. And then we already talked about Pitch the Perfect Investment. I think that would be a really good, it's an accessible book. It's a solid book. I definitely put that on my recommended. And then you've got the financial statement analysis, which I also previously recommended.
Very nice.
Okay.
I do have a question, Ione, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Recommendation, Sophia, do you have Main Street Millionaires as a part of your list?
Actually, I don't. I think I may have heard that book referenced in the past before, but I don't have it on my list. But if it's something that you would like to also recommend to the group, great. And maybe
absolutely.
I'll even look into getting a copy for myself.
Absolutely. For the beginners, definitely. From a better testing perspective and understanding how we got here.
Oh, okay.
This is
great.
Phenomenal information. Thank you.
And that book, Main Street Millionaires, can be purchased from the Better Investing website. We have an online store, and we did have a sale on it at the end of the year, but it's still actually at a very reasonable price. I believe it's less than $10. So if you are interested in that, please pick up a copy at betterinvesting.org. And you visit our store, just type in and search Main Street Millionaires, three words, it should come up.
All right, so the value investor in me has to ask, is that going to go on sale again later this year?
Okay, like a true better investing member waiting for the sale. You know what, Sophia, I'm going to hook you up. I'm going to hook you up with a copy.
Okay.
Club. Yeah, it was. I'm gonna shock the world and say this, but it was on sale for a penny, and like the value investor I am, I picked up some to give away as chapter prizes. But yeah, I can give that to you. That's the least I can do, Sophia. So
all right, awesome.
I'll hook you up.
All right, sounds good. All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to show, just kind of complete out a little bit of the presentation here on the advanced tab. This may be a little bit a ways away for some people. Maybe it take another year or two before people can kind of start to book some of these issues. But these are more advanced topics related to valuation, financial modeling, and then value investing, both from the classical value investing that started with Graham and Dodd, and then some books from the more modern value investing by individuals like Joel Greenblatt that I think would make for a really great addition to people's libraries. And then finally, the CFA Institute Investment Series. I mean, nobody has an obligation to buy these books or anything like that. But once you feel like you're up to the challenge and it's been a few years and you're like, okay, I'm ready to kind of take that next step, this will actually be the type of literature that professional money managers will need, in the sense that the CFA, for those that don't know, it stands for the Chartered Financial Analyst, and it's actually the most recommended, I would say, certification within the investment management field. So if you want to know, you know, what some of these big-time hedge fund managers or mutual fund managers or what the people on their team, what they know and how they look at things, how they analyze, this will be basically the series to turn to. Okay. Now, in terms of the finance industry nonfiction, these are just kind of some behind-the-scenes war stories that I would recommend for people to kind of take a look at. And you also see some notes here. So the first three books are about the financial crisis back in 2008. So for people that are curious about having some additional perspective around that and try to understand a little bit more deeply, okay, what actually happened, what were some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, those are really good. These next three books actually relate to more about, you know, here are some of the financial winners and losers, more kind of like personal type of stories as it relates to the financial crisis. Now, these books here, starting from Barbarians at the Gate down to, say, Liar's Poker, this is more about when, back in the 80s, when leverage buyouts and the private equity funds were really on fire and everybody was just doing all this debt to buy all these companies and things like that. And I think what's really great about this is that this really does kind of set into motion, explain, well, here's some of the financial DNA, here's what kind of got things started, and then it, what we saw back in 2008 can actually be traced back to some of the events that are written about within these books. And then if you want to learn more about hedge funds or investment banking, things like that, these are some other interesting books, starting from When Genius Fails down to The Last Tycoon. I think, or more of a, you know, kind of a general reading of behind-the-scenes stories, you know, war stories, that sort of thing. These are among my favorites. So here, a comprehensive bibliography is just a comprehensive listing or database of everything that we saw from the prior tab. You can see kind of the different levels, the areas, the titles, the authors, of course, links for to purchase the book. And then this final tab are some different web resources at different levels. So for example, if you're a beginner, go ahead and provide some instructions or advice about, okay, here's the Finance Yahoo site, here's the finviz.com. If you're at a more intermediate level, so here's some resources that I provide to you, like here's how to look at the SEC EDGAR database, here's how to use the whale wisdom, which is the ability to look at what some of these hedge funds, what they're buying, what they're selling, and get some insight about what's in demand and what's not. And then these last three resources actually relate to the value investing program at Columbia University. So for those that may not be aware, Columbia University is actually considered to be the home of Graham and Dodd value investing, which is its own type of investment philosophy within the investment space. So what I like about these resources is that they provide you with newsletters that you can read, and they actually feature interviews with some of the different portfolio managers. And one thing that I, for a retail investor to really take away from this is that if you want to learn how to invest, I think it really helps to understand, how do other people invest? What anchors them? What are they looking at? What do they consider? And that can help you refine your own investment style. Another resource that I think is great is what's known as the 5-5-5-5 investment fund that they have with the Student Managed Investment Fund there. And their investment philosophy, actually, they select five stocks. They don't have any more than five reasons for their investment thesis, and they like to hold for a minimum of 5 years. I think this actually aligns pretty well with the approach that you do find in the better investing community. And if I go to this link here, what's really nice about this is that you get to see all the different stocks that they do. And then if you click on the link for any particular stock or write-up, you get to see they did all the homework for you. They did all the hard stuff. So all you really need to do is read it, see, bring it up to today's type of data and see what else you can research and find out about it. So this is actually a really great Kickstarter where if you're saying, okay, I'm interested in this type of company or that type of company, this is actually not a bad place to start for the retail investor to take a look at and say, okay, they did all the difficult work for me. Now, do I agree with that or disagree based on the data that I can find today? And then the last one is actually the Pershing Square Challenge. It's actually a stock picking contest or competition that they do for their students every year. And what's really great about this is that they actually provide you with recordings for you to review and look at. And what this will do is this gives you an insight into, oh, okay, here's basically what a high-stakes stock pitch would look and sound like. It kind of helps you refine your approach, and you get, again, you get to see how other people are approaching a particular stock or analysis or things like that. That may give you some ideas for how it is that you want to approach your analysis. Okay, so now I will stop sharing. That's what I wanted to share with the group.
All I can say is there should be no wonder why I like Sophia Batella so much, because she came to talk about herself, but yet again, here she is sharing so many resources, which, you know, I all I can do is just sit back and listen, because, you know, you never know who's listening and where they're coming from and what interests them. Yes, we here have a bend towards the beginner investor, but as my mom always says, this My Investing Story is for all investors, the beginner investors, the intermediate, and even the experienced. And so, Sophia, thank you so much for sharing those resources, and I will be sharing that with those who are on live with us, the Zoom. For all those looking for the recap, you have to email us at abetterinvesting@gmail.com. But yeah, Sophia, man, thank you so much. And what I loved about those resources is, you know, they're free, they're open to the public, but many of us don't know about them. And mm-hmm. So the same 60 minutes that you spend listening to CNBC and trying to filter through that noise, you could actually have one of these presentations going on in the background that could really shore up your knowledge and your foundation in regards to investment education. So, again, thank you. Thank you, Sophia, for that.
Actually, a Jewish saying that says, all beginnings are difficult, which is true. All beginnings are difficult, and it will be difficult to digest all of this at once, but it can be done. It can be done.
Thank you for that reminder and that encouragement. I'm actually going to shift it over to Ms. Ann before I ask my final questions, but I don't want to wait too late to get her input in this.
Well, first of all, Ms. Ann is so honored that you referenced your mom. I'm so excited to be revered in that way by Ione McNeil. Thank you, Ione. Sophia,
mm-hmm.
Listen, after 20-plus years of doing this, you really made my day today, because I'm still one of those beginner investors. And that, I don't know about everybody else on this call and everybody who's going to be listening to this podcast in the future. She just gave an enormous amount of information, but it all starts with one decision to do something about your financial situation. And so can you share with us, as an adult, the moment you decided to do something different? I know I only talked about your younger age, but at what point did you decide to do something different and really go from, and I heard everything you said, but I want to encourage, you know, a lot of people listening that have the head knowledge but may not have taken that step, and they research information up the yang-yang,
mm-hmm.
but they've not taken that step yet. Is there anything you can say to encourage them in terms of your own experience and the action you actually took?
Sure. So I think that'll be a pretty easy question to answer, because quite frankly, up until last year, I had never really owned a stock in a portfolio, like as an investor. But then after I did the Pfizer presentation, I was like, wait, this actually looks pretty good. I should probably buy some of this myself. And so then I did. I bought 100 shares and I keep that. And it's in my portfolio. It's one of my, what I call the anchor stocks. What I really like about it is the dividend yield. That provides it with quite a bit of stability, which, as we know with the markets lately, markets go up, markets go down. That's pretty much what happens. But Yeah, so it was after being part of Better Investing and presenting to the group and things like that, but I just said, okay, I'm going to take this next step and actually become an investor and do something about it. So I did that.
Oh, hold it 1 second. Let me just make sure that everybody heard what she said. Hold up. Let me tighten up my collar on my shirt here as I calm myself to say, little as I know, and as long as I've been a Better Investing member, and I don't want any of you to judge me out there listening saying, what? You know very little. I know this, that $20 that I invested 20, 25 years ago, every single month, and that DRIP program, and what was it, low-cost investing program Better Investing had, I am just so, you have truly made my day. I do have a couple of notes here, but Michelle, there's hope, Michelle, for some of us. Now you mentioned M&A. Can you share with our listeners, what does that stand for?
Sure. So M&A, it's an acronym for mergers and acquisitions. So all that really means is that in a merger, the philosophy behind that or the thinking behind that is that you have two companies of roughly equal stature and they join together to become one new company. Otherwise, it would be an acquisition, or typically it's a larger company that is buying out a smaller company, either in part or in full, usually in full so that they can have the control of the board and roll it up into their operations and so on and so forth.
Perfect. Thank you. I just wanted to clear that up. I mean, I knew, but we do have lots of people who are here for the very first time, and it's always good to help with those acronyms. But I do want to take this opportunity to share with those who may be listening for the first, second, or third time that you are listening to hashtag My Investing Story. And what you've been hearing tonight phenomenally from, I want to call her now you're Miss Sophia. People call me Miss Ann sometimes, but now you are Miss Sophia Patella, and we have just been blessed by her presentation. But we also want to remind everyone, especially if you came on a little late, that Better Investing, as volunteers, we are just very excited to invite all of you to join us at our National Better Investing Conference. It's going to be held on October 21st through the 24th in Dallas, Texas. Let me say that again, Dallas, Texas. And it is also, we're hosting our financial empowerment on that Saturday. And so we want to encourage all of you to join us for our financial empowerment seminar this October the 23rd. And so this event is free. It is free on that Saturday, and we really want to encourage all of you to consider joining us. Yes, take and make the investment to come and join us on that day. This is our third year hosting this event, this particular event, inside of the Better Investing Conference. And it has just been a phenomenal opportunity for growth. But either way, go to betterinvesting.org and review the schedule. Plan to join us for that event also. And with that, Sophia, you have truly made my day, especially now to share with the world with all that you know and all that you've read. Because of Better Investing giving you a comfort level, you made a commitment to make a decision to take action. And I think that that is just phenomenal. I also put in the chat, every week we ask everyone if they would please make a commitment to take an action. And I think you just helped to understand why it is so important to make a just take an action by faith. And based upon what you've heard in the model club presentation, even the one you did yourself, you realize, like so many of us, now, if you can show how did you actually make that purchase, because that's a question many people have. You want to do it. They want to do it, but they don't know what to do next. So can you share with us that next step you took? And then when I turn it back over to Danny.
Yeah, sure. So I just went on TD Ameritrade. I actually had a prior brokerage account that never really did much at spot trades, and they got bought out. And I just kind of went to TD Ameritrade and bought the shares online, and that was it. Pretty simple.
Excellent. Thank you so very much. We want to remind everybody to please put in the chat your commitment for next week and the one action you are willing to take after you've heard this phenomenal presentation. And how many years have you analyzed stocks?
Me?
Yes.
So I've been doing this over a decade now.
10?
Yes.
At least 10 years.
Yeah.
But it was only after she became aware of that investing, became a better investing member, did she take action. So we don't know who we're talking to, but this is why we host this program every Wednesday entitled hashtag My Investing Story. Everybody has an investing story, and our desire is to use this platform to share it with the world, because I cannot think of another action you could take. Well, for me, next to my salvation, but this and my family, you know, it is just a phenomenal action you can take. So thank you, Sophia. Back to you, Ayomi. Thank you.
You're welcome. That was going to be my follow-up question, which is, and I'm so glad you, again, took us on that journey, because it's one thing to be in the career of high finance, right, knowing these companies in and out and being able to talk about it, but not yet make yourself be able to financially benefit from that knowledge and break it down to a very granular level to where you can actually apply it. So I wanted to ask, especially since, you know, your transformation moment came last year, you became a better investing member, you've been visiting a lot of the different model investment clubs. What is one, your financial vision now, and what are some things that you are doing and setting up for yourself to be able to actualize that financial vision? If it's a Roth IRA, the Roth 401k, the traditional, just kind of talk to us a little bit, because I'm very interested to know how you are starting to set this up, just to share and inspire some other people of their options as they also transition and move toward doing something.
Sure. So, you know, I just like to consider things as a first things first type of mentality. So as I was starting to find some of these stocks and buy them and stuff like that, I was like, wait, this is kind of silly. I'm still renting. I should go and buy a home. So then I went and I bought a home, which I just moved in last month. So I consider that to be my first things first. So right now, some of my priorities are just, you know, getting stuff fixed around the house, that sort of thing, just taking care of, you know, the finding the P's and Q's, as you can imagine, that a new homeowner would face and experience. But also, I've got a 401k available for my job and things like that. So once I get a little bit more time, I want to look into that a little bit more in depth, because it has been recommended to me that if I'm really super interested in just picking my own stocks, because I'm not really that interested in just picking, like going with a mutual fund that they make available through the 401k, I do want to select my own securities. I want all of that to be 100% my decisions. That it has been recommended that maybe the Roth 401k might be a better option for me. So I'll kind of work with my tax accountant and figure out what makes the most sense from that perspective, things like that as well. So just kind of getting things in place. But outside of buying the home bit, I haven't really done a whole lot in terms of a financial vision. It's just kind of, you know, I just build up my war chest, and then when it's time to do something, I do something. And that's basically what I do.
I think my last two questions is this. How has this transformation changed your perspective on money and investing? Because you've already had a relationship with it from an intellectual and from a career perspective, but I'm interested in how what your new perspective is. And my last question is, what's the top one to two better investing resources that you've really been enjoying thus far?
Okay. So to answer the first question, you know, it's just one of those classic cases where if you've worked long enough in the slaughterhouse, you'll never eat meat again. So it's just a little bit of that. That was kind of keeping me away for a little bit. It's like, oh, I know a little bit too much about how things can work in this world. Not sure if that's really where the little guy can really win out and really be able to come out ahead and things like that. But, you know, if you develop a certain discipline, a certain strategy, if you keep the right focus and you just maintain your momentum and so on and so forth, then I think that can actually do quite a bit to kind of help you keep pushing forward, help make those gains, things like that. I do think one big weakness within the retail investor community that you don't quite see as much within the professional investor community is, you know, retail investors are almost in a way scared to take advantage of their gains and just sell off and say, okay, I want, here's my money, I'm now going to take it and run with it. So in the professional investment world, there's not as much of a hesitancy to say, you know what, I think maybe we've topped out for this particular stock or this sector or this market overall. So you just kind of bring everything back to cash and sit on that for a while until you see how things shake out. And then when the markets dip again, then you've got the money to be able to opportunity. Yes. You can go ahead. Exactly. You can buy at more of a discount than what you may have had before, and then that can also enhance your gains for the future. So I think that's something to also really carefully keep in mind. If, you know, as I read through the magazines and stuff like that, one of the hardest things to do is decide when and how to sell. Well, you're not married to the stock. You're here to make money. Make the money if you can. That's just how I see it.
And so your top two resources are, sound like one is the Bed Investor magazine.
Yes, so I was going to say that the magazine is actually one of my top two resources. Another thing that I really enjoy is looking at the first cuts and seeing some of the other analysis that some other members have done and being able to kind of backtrack and see kind of historically, okay, here's what they thought the price would be, how well did that track, do a little bit of back testing if there's more of a history on a particular stock. But also like to check out and see, okay, where's the stock trading at today? If it's at a five-year high, not too interested in it. But if it's, say, retraced, say, by about a third to 50% of where it was at the time of when I'm reading the first cut report, then that's something worth looking into. Again, that's just the value investor in me trying to find a discount as well.
I love it. Thank you so much for breaking that down. Because, it, you know, again, you brought so many different perspectives today that I was excited to share with everyone. One is your background in finance. Two, you are a Better Investing member less than a year old, and you've had extensive travel visiting a lot of the different model clubs. So again, thank you so much, Sophia, for your time, for your story, for the resources that you shared and have always been sharing every time that you and I have interacted. I have definitely gained and grown from it, because just as much as you may be learning from me, I'm learning just as much from you. And I'm also so grateful that you share with the rest of our South Florida Chapter Model Investment Club. So again, thank you for your time. And I want to just bring up some things, especially with the books that you mentioned. I want to let people know that Tuesday, August 10th, which this is a monthly event that the DC Regional Chapter hosts, is a Money Matters book discussion. So some of the books that Sophia has in her list, the Better Investing DC Regional Chapter every month does a review of a book and has the author come visit, and it's a really nice event. So that information is in the chat, and that their next Money Matters book discussion is going to be Tuesday, August 10th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And also, as always, every first Tuesday of the month, the North Florida chapter is going to be having their investment education program called the Stock Investment Workshop. And so that's going to be Tuesday, August 3rd, also at 7:30 Eastern Time. And last but not least, one of my favorite chapters outside of my chapter, the Better Investing Georgia chapter, is having their 7th annual Investor Education Fair. And that's going to be Saturday, August 21st from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And that PDF and link to register is in the chat. From my knowledge, all of these events are free and open to the public, not just Better Investing members. So please check us out, visit us in all of our different capacities, whether it be a class, a workshop, or an investor fair. We're happy to host you, but we are also looking forward to you becoming a Better Investing member. So with that, thank you, Sophia and Ms. Ann.
All right. We want to thank all of the conversation in the chat. Ann Newman, listen, Michelle, Marshall, we could not do this without you, and, of course, Teresa. We want to encourage everybody, please comment, like, and share the show. Please comment, like, and share the show. And every week we ask all of you to please make at least one commitment in the chat of at least one thing you're willing to do for next week. And next week we're going to ask you to just really give us an update, because we really want to provide a place of accountability. And Sophia, you really, I cannot tell you how much you really encouraged me tonight to know that you've been analyzing stocks for 10 years plus, but it wasn't until you became a member of Better Investing that you pulled the trigger. That has been so encouraging. Wow, so encouraging. And I think that you lit up lots of people tonight. But equally as important, those individuals who will listen to this in the future on a podcast all over the world will be encouraged to go to betterinvesting.org. So we want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Howard Johnson, we have some new male millennials for you. We're going to reach out to you, and we're going to ask everybody, please join us in Dallas, Texas for the BINC conference. And until next week, see you later. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.